Hi, and welcome back to the Ask Sue Show. That must be the quickest turnaround I've ever had. And thank you very much to... Oh, hold on a minute. It's just starting with my little tune. Hold on. Hi, and welcome back to the Ask Sue Show. I apologise for that slight delay. I was being a bit slow off the whole mark. So I'm just going to see if I can be very professional and get Jim back on the show while I'm talking to you. What's everybody's thoughts so far as the first part of the show? Let us know. I'm going to try and be in two places at once, so you must bear with me because I'm trying to dial and everything else. Oh, how good's that? Talk about live ringing.
Hello.
Hi there, darling. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. We're back.
Yes, we're back live in the air.
Yay.
I spoke straight over my intro and everything, so I've totally messed up for the first part anyway. Nothing like live radio. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
So, Jim, let's just very quickly go back. We'll let everybody get back into the phone lines. I'm looking at the fact of Memphis then. I want to put something to you. Let's put Jeff's situation towards you. Now, obviously, I know you've got to be careful on how you say this, but let's just say it's not Jeff then, okay? Let's just be a bit funny here. There's a guy that lives by a school. He lives near a shop that's near the road, which was something that was mentioned apparently about why there was a problem. Also, the fact that he lived in a built-up area, but let's face it, that this guy's got experience, he's a trainer, and let's face it, by what you're saying, is actually what Memphis needs. Do you see any problems with where we are wanting Memphis to actually go?
As long as the person has the ability to keep Memphis safely contained. In other words, has, for instance, a fenced yard, and I'd even like to see a kennel within that yard, so that both for, not just for the public safety, for the dog's safety, that nobody that had ill intent or was just too stupid to breathe could get in a situation where they could get hurt. So, somebody didn't just stumble into an area and do something stupid, then I don't think the location really matters. I think what matters is whether the person can adequately provide safe, controlled shelter for the dog. You know, if somebody didn't have a fenced yard, that would be an issue, no matter how experienced they were to me, because that means they're either going to have to walk the dog all the time or the dog is going to have the possibility of getting into trouble. And dogs do accidentally get out sometimes. So
yeah.
A fence yard, I think, would be important. And again, we're not talking about a dog that's a huge threat to the world here, but I'm being perhaps overcautious with Memphis because of the notoriety that he has brought up and the fact that there are people out there with ill intent or that are simply uninformed that would try to take advantage of a situation. So, like I said, with that in mind, in this kind of a situation, I would be more interested to see somebody who had some kind of secondary containment, again, to keep not just the public safe, but to keep Memphis safe.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. See, this is the thing, I mean, I know there's a lot of Chinese whisper and it's putting a lot of people in a lot of situations. So, Jim, have you got a problem if I bring Jeff on the line with you?
No.
Right, okay, let's bring Jeff in. I know that Jeff will have some questions, and it's all like me saying, oh, well, what do you think of this and the other? Let's talk to the guy who's actually in the situation. Hi, Jeff, darling, how are you doing?
Hi, everyone, how are you?
Hey, Jeff,
okay.
How are you?
Hey, Jim, how's it going?
Doing pretty good.
Good, good. Thank you for sharing your insights into this. It's enlightening. that's for sure. I appreciate it.
And I think it's too bad for everybody involved that this has gotten so sideways. Because, you know, this working with a dog that's got some issues and working with him to retrain him for being adoptable shouldn't have to be this difficult.
I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not talking about a dog that has bitten 13 people or has killed somebody. We've got we're talking about a dog that doesn't have any kind of a rap sheet to go with him or accusations of bad behavior here. It's not like one of the guys, like I said, it's not like a dog that's accused of having killed somebody.
Right.
Jeff, is there any questions you want to ask Jim? Because I'm going to go through who's on the line. So if you want to, I don't mind you looking after Sue's place for a minute. If you want to ask some questions.
Sure, why not? I'm glad we get the opportunity to chat because at the meeting and, you know, I do seminars and workshops and I know when you're the speaker, afterwards you have a lot of people online waiting for you. And that's the only reason why I just kind of came over, said
yeah,
hello
and
good night.
And I appreciate that because it was kind of crazy there and there's you know, people wanted to ask questions and so forth.
Yeah, and I understood that because it happens to me a lot. So that's the only reason why I said hello and goodbye, just out of respect for you and your time.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. I guess as it relates to, and I'm not going to even discuss any he saids or she saids as far as what their position is and the allegations that it's personal against me, because that's really not what we're about. I mean, we really just wanted mm-hmm. to have Memphis with us. I mean, that was really our goal from the time we were told to return him because of my choice to have Memphis interact with the kids. Mm-hmm. So, and just based on some of the things that you were discussing, you know, I think I may have even said this on the show last week that, you know, Memphis specifically is not an unpredictable dog and that all of his behaviors are predictable for the same fact that you had mentioned that dogs don't lie.
Exactly.
they tell us
and
exactly
you know, and
what
you know
they're feeling
well
right
I
now.
Do that, and you know as well as I do that most of the time when people say, the dog did something and I had no warning, it's because either the person doesn't know what they're looking at or they weren't paying attention.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I that's why I think Joe, who had asked you a couple of questions, he posed the question to me, I believe, last week, what an unpredictable dog is. And my response was that, you know, are they out there? Sure, they're out there. They're few and far between, but you can't describe an unpredictable dog because their behavior is unpredictable.
Right, and I would agree with you on that because, yeah, they are out there. They are few and far between because those dogs that I've had contact with that have, people have said, oh, the dog just goes off, I've been able to stand there and go, okay, the dog is talking to me just fine. I don't know what your problem is, but the dog is getting through to me. And if you were either paying attention or knew what you were looking at, you'd have seen that this is a dog that, for instance, you know, there have been several dogs on television that have bitten reporters in the middle of interviews, and I've seen some of the videos, and you sit there and you look at it and you go, okay, that dog is going to bite in 3, 2, 1, go.
Yeah, the infamous German Shepherd one, I remember the first time I saw that, I'm thinking, this guy's got to stand up.
Yeah. And you wonder not only, you know, why is the reporter being such a ding-dong, but why is the handler asleep at the switch?
Yeah.
That was completely preventable by either one of them.
Right.
So, yeah, I do not see Memphis as unpredictable. His body language was very clear. He transmitted exactly what his intentions were. I mean, there was nothing. He's not a dog that every once in a while you find one that's a little sneaky. But Memphis was very upfront about it. When he didn't like the stranger coming at him, acting weird and dressed weird, he was very particular about it. And when I first approached him and everything, he communicated very well. You know, the saying that some people have that, oh, pit bulls, you know, they're unpredictable and they don't communicate and they don't give warnings. Yes, they do. They're very clear. You just have to pay attention.
Right. So I guess I have a couple of questions, and these are probably generic questions. And it surrounds, you know, the purpose of evaluations. And, you know, I mean, when I do evaluations, they're not always the same. You know, it depends on the situation and what we're trying to find out sometimes. I felt yours was very thorough, and I understood precisely what was going on as far as worst-case scenario, because sometimes you need to know what the worst-case scenario is. And my question to you is, you know, based on the fact that, you know, Memphis did not respond to provocation very well, is that fair to say? That's what I would say.
How do you mean?
You know, when he's presented with a provoking situation, he doesn't respond.
He responded extremely well. When he was provoked to do something, he did it. When we tried to provoke him into giving a bad response, he gave the bad response, but then was able to be redirected from that bad response. So, you know, I wouldn't say that he responded badly to provocation. I'd say that, you know, the provocation got the desired result in getting him to show out.
I guess that was a bad choice of word on my part. Maybe the proper word would be he responded appropriately.
I mean, he responded in an understandable and logical in a way that made sense to a dog.
Right. So based on whether it was like Memphis or any other dog that you've done similar tests to, you know, in the state of New Jersey, we actually have laws on the books that protect dogs who are provoked.
Right. We have it in Florida, too.
Oh, you do? Okay. So, and I guess I brought that up just because, and I understand the liability. I have my own pit bull rescue, and, you know, and when you're a small rescue and you don't have the resources of a municipal shelter, you know, you're even more careful when it comes liability, you know. So I really am sensitive to their position, but I don't understand the liability aspect of it, you know, and I know the laws that protect dogs that are provoked. I understand property law in New Jersey. Once a piece of property is transferred to another owner, and I was aware that cases against municipal shelters were hard to find. I wasn't aware that there weren't any successful ones. I'd be interested to know if you have any resources where we can look information like that up.
Yeah. I know that I've been told that by an attorney friend of mine who is very, very well-informed and involved in dog law issues. And, I can email you his information because he's the one who told me there has not ever been a successful case for any of various reasons, usually because the city simply has had the person waive any liability back to the city and released the jurisdiction from any civil responsibility there, which may just make sense.
Mm-hmm. And one of your last comments about, you know, where Memphis could be placed, and, you know, obviously I'm biased in where I think he should go.
I would hope so.
Any particular place?
Yeah. I live on a four-house, dead-end street. I am the last house on the dead-end street. I have a 6-foot stockade fenced-in yard, and my dogs are never in the yard unsupervised, but that's just how we've always been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
sounds like my dogs.
Yeah, I mean, I just part mostly because I love being out there with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's why him and Diane get on so well.
But I mean, I I've been in rescue a long time. I've been, you know, I'm not naive to some things that, and I agree with you 100%. There's some people out there throwing rat poison over people's fences and stuff. You know, and not even situations like this, but those for
no.
people who were listening, and I don't know if those are some of the things you may have been referring to, but for people who are listening,
yes.
these things actually happen. There are some sick
yes.
people out there that throw, you know, poisons over fences and stuff.
Well, remember when we were dealing with the situation with Lennox, one of the adult neighbors of Lennox's owners threatened their 12-year-old daughter to beat her up with a baseball bat if the dog came home. And, you know, then the neighborhood had also threatened Lennox's safety that they were going to kill the dog. So, yeah, that kind of stuff happens.
Right.
Especially when you've got a case that has, for whatever reason, has wound up getting a lot of attention. And it's got feelings
exactly.
running on both sides. You know, that's the downside of these cases. It's why, for instance, when I worked the case in Pittsburgh where the dog didn't kill the child, the dog was released, but we moved the dog out of the area and to a location that I still can't disclose because we don't want the dog to be victimized.
Exactly. Exactly.
That was a fatality, so that was a whole different case. Again, Memphis hasn't bitten anyone.
Exactly. Now, can I just bring some up to you, Jim? You know, you were saying before
sure.
that shelters have to be careful on which dogs they rehome and everything because, obviously, of dogs biting and everything else. And I think, Jeff, you've heard this story, probably can give me more information than I'm actually going to say, but they actually rehomed a dog after it bitten somebody or something. What was the story over that, Jeff? You can tell me a bit more, but something with Bloomfield, wasn't it, that they actually, was it they rehomed one or something happened after they had?
Yeah, there was a woman who was bitten by a dog in the shelter through the fence as she was interacting with all the dogs, and it was the outdoor runs, and you've been there, the outdoor runs
yeah.
where you presented Memphis to the dogs.
Yeah.
A woman was bitten through the fence. She was taken to the hospital, treated, and that same dog was adopted out a short time after with... There was no evaluation done. There was, there was no reports of it, and it's brought up some controversy because you have a dog that, was returned to the shelter as well. So you have a dog that actually bit someone. Someone was hospitalized, was treated at the local hospital, and the dog was rehomed without any evaluation or any kind of anything close to what Memphis has been exposed to. So there's been some controversy locally with this particular dog compared to why Memphis is being treated so differently.
And to back that up, I've got Karen in the chat room just put, and Fitzpatrick totally mispresented that dog bite incident on last week's show. He lied about it completely. And I can actually say that Karen is 100% true because I've spoken to the lady since. Who has actually confirmed all of that. I couldn't remember without going to email, and I've got about 6 windows open already. So
mm-hmm.
I can actually back up exactly what that story was. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
so this is where it comes to lies, Chinese whisper, and everything else. At the end of the day, from all the different ways, is really not helping Memphis. Why does it? Why do they not? They need to lie on the radio to tell us stuff when I wanted to do a radio show that was giving both sides.
why human beings do things after all the years as a policeman, I've never been able to figure that one out. That's why, again, I like to work with dogs because they tend to make sense on a regular basis. why people do things and what they actually do, you know, go figure. Look around, and it's easy to tell that Now, as far as the other dog situation, it seems to me that the best practices for any shelter would be to have consistent treatment across the board for dogs, period, no matter which dog it happens to be. And if you've got a policy that you don't adopt out dogs that have bitten, then that means you don't adopt out dogs that have bitten. If you've got a policy that says you don't adopt out dogs that you believe are aggressive, then that means there should be any dog that you think is aggressive should not be adopted. I'm not one for putting hard and fast rules on stuff, but I am one for being consistent. And, I've talked and worked with the folks from No Kill Nation and, in trying to get dogs homed as much as possible, and fully agree with the fact that we're not going to put, nobody can responsibly put observably dangerous dogs out into the public, but that every dog deserves a chance to be placed and to, if it can be worked with and successfully rehabilitated or retrained, it should be within the resources available. So if we're going to apply a set of rules to one dog, then we should apply it across the board. If we're going to say that a dog that bites unprovoked is not placeable, then that should be the rule. Sticking your fingers through a kennel fence, if that's what happened, should not be thought of as being provoking. So, I would have concerns with, at least without some treatment, placing any dog with a known unprovoked bite history. I'm real concerned and real cautious about that.
Mm. Yeah.
I know that the shelter that I ran, if we had a dog that had an unprovoked bite history, we simply did not adopt it.
Exactly. Right. Can Jim, are you okay to stay on the line? And you, Jeff?
Yeah.
We've got Moira. Let me just, I've got so many things somewhere here. Hold a minute. I'm getting there eventually, honest. We've got Moira, who is one of the ACOs that, am I right, Moira, in saying that you picked up Memphis originally?
Yes, I did.
Okay, can you tell us about that day and sort of explain to us?
I'm a little bit nervous, I'm sorry.
It's okay. You don't have to be nervous. It's a little family here, darling. It's fine.
It's
say it as it is.
Moira, no problem.
Sue is relatively harmless.
Yeah, she's funny.
As harmless as Memphis.
Okay. Let me just start. When I got the call to pick up stray dogs, February 6th, probably approximately around maybe 8:20 that morning, Glenwood Ave, I believe. And I met up with a few people that were in the area. Like, there were crossing guards. There was a cop that was there watching over the dog at the time. And Memphis was just, hanging around. At the location where he was, there were kids around because they were going to school that morning. So I was unable to... It was not safe for me to approach him at the time. So I try to make it a little bit, try to get him out of the area so he would be in a safe location for me to capture him. It's hard to really, you know, capture a dog in an open space. I tried, you know, I really tried my best to have him contained in someone's backyard, but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't all for it. So eventually he ran around, you know, ran around town and ended up on Olive Street, which is a dead end street. He ran into the back of an abandoned house, and he had nowhere else to go at the time.
Perfect.
So, I'm sorry?
Perfect. A great way to be able to safely catch him.
Yes. Yes. And, yeah, okay. So, you know, there was, he had nowhere else to go. He was cornered. And the time Mike Sinella, another ACO, I had called him because he was in the area at the time, and it would have really made things a lot easier and safer at the time to capture Memphis. I would, you know, for ACO, I really just didn't want to any incident whatsoever. So since he was in the area, I asked him if he, you know, would like to come and help out, and he said, sure. So he came by. We met up on Olive Street where Memphis was contained, and he had a snare pole. So I told him to just go ahead and take get Memphis, put a pole around him until I get my leash. So he, you know, Memphis never growls. He never snarls at Mike Sinella. I was there, okay? So there was no growling. There was no snarling. I removed the snare pole, put my leash on, and Memphis, you know, I just opened the door to my van. Memphis hopped in, made himself at home, took him back to the shelter, and that was it.
Thanks. And can I just get you to repeat that? So he never did any aggression, even though he's in a situation that he didn't know what was happening next and where you'd expect a dog literally to lash out at you, he never did anything at all.
No, he did not. Memphis never growled at Mike Sinella. He never growled at me. I'm sorry. He never growled at me or Mike Sinella. He was nervous. You can tell he was nervous like any other dog. He was a little bit scared, but there was no lunging. There was no growling. There was no snarling. There was no teeth. The accusations that are being, you know, said by Karen Laurie and Patrick, it's untrue. I am the ACO that caught Memphis. I'm the one that picked him up. And, you know, so the accusations about Memphis being aggressive, it's untrue. It never happened.
And what was he like when you actually got him over to the actual rescue then?
Memphis was relaxed. He was tired because we were running around for like an hour. So he was just... He was tired, you know. He looked at me when I opened the door, you know, when we got to the shelter, and I'm like, you know, I said to him, hey, you ready to go? And he just looked at me like that, you know, he has this really cute eyes, oh my God. But, you know, he just gave me that look, and I'm like, okay, you know, ready. And he hopped out of the van. We walked into the shelter. He never tried to attack any of the staff members that worked on that day when Memphis was brought in. There was still no aggression. Memphis was calm. He was just tired. And there was no problem, no issue whatsoever with Memphis at all. None.
That's great. And to be fair, that's when you would expect him to be a bit funny, you know, a bit unsure, not sure what's going on, scared. And all of the other things as well, to be fair.
Yes, exactly. And especially when we first cornered him, you know, you think that he will try to lunge at us and try to bite us, but he didn't. He realized, like, okay, you know, I might as well just go with them. And
I've got this. Sorry, I've just got this imaginary white flag of him saying, oh, sod it, let's just give in.
Yeah, that's what pretty much, you know, pretty much what he did, but he was still good. He was a very good boy. He was a good, you know, he was a very good dog. He is a very good dog. I've never had any problems in Memphis. None of the staff have had any issues with Memphis. I've worked with other ACOs other than Spinella and kennel attendants, and Memphis never tried to bite anyone, not even the superintendent, supervisor slash superintendent, Kathleen Georgievich. He was never aggressive towards anyone.
Great. I've got to fetch Hillary in because she's going to be tapping on this screen in a minute and saying, excuse me. Hi, Hillary. Come on you come.
Hi. I just connected myself. Moira, relax, babe. Hi. You can just talk like you're talking to me. That's how Sue is. Don't even worry about it. So tell everybody how long you interacted with Memphis, how long you were at the shelter.
I think from February till the month of August when they let me go.
So that was a long time.
My last day. At least 7 months. That was at least 7 months. And the whole 7 months, there was never an issue with Memphis. The whole thing started with the accusations about Memphis being a bad dog started out by Kathleen Georgievich, the supervisor slash superintendent. She claimed that he had issues, and she wanted to have him tested. And, you know, we asked, like myself and other staff, said, what issues does Memphis have? Because he does. Like, this is just ridiculous. Oh, he's just a time bomb. Like, seriously? A time bomb. Okay. I really just didn't get it, and, you know, she just, in her mind, that he was not a good dog. She keeps saying that he was a bad dog, and I've never, I've never seen Memphis upset or having a bad day. Even with all the dogs barking in his head all day, he was just nonchalant about just about everything. Mm. He loved people, and I've even seen Memphis have taken treats from kids that visited a shelter with their parents through that open pool program that Kathleen started with the feeding. Mm-hmm. The people were told to take some of the kiblets out of the bucket and feed the dogs. And Memphis was fed by a little girl. It was not intentional. The little girl didn't know at the time, but Memphis, he never growled at the little girl. He took the treat from her hand like it was nothing. Memphis is really like the type of dog, he can care less. As long as, he's just a happy-go-lucky guy.
And what was the staff told to tell the public if they asked about them?
The staff was told by Kathleen that Memphis is a bad dog, not even to say unadoptable, that he is a time bomb. Pretty much, yeah, he is a time bomb. He's not adoptable. And staff were actually telling people this. The only thing staff should tell people is that he's not available. That's it. Not that he's a bad dog. That is just, it's not, that is not the right thing to do.
It's unprofessional.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, the same so-called bad dog that people were being told about, which, Memphis, they were walking up to his cage and like, this guy? And Memphis is like looking at them like, yeah. No reaction. A lot of times he would just sit there and watch people walk past his cage. He will sit in the back of his cage and people will pass, walk past him. They're curious. They see him. A lot of people adored Memphis. Like, a lot of people wanted to adopt Memphis at that time, even after she claimed that he was not adoptable. Kathleen claimed that he was unadoptable. People still wanted Memphis because of how content he was. He was the only dog in the shelter that was not carrying on. While the other 8 dogs, 12 dogs, whatever, that was there, that were stressed out and just barking their heads off. Members will sit in his cage as if nothing, you know, nothing bothers him. So this is like, you know, we were like, I was really surprised to hear her saying that Memphis is a bad, you know, that he's a bad dog when he, clearly he's not. I think right. She just has her own little personal vendetta against Memphis. Like, she targeted Memphis from day one when she first set her eyes on him. As if,
well, I saw him interact with children, too, and he was a perfect gentleman. I mean, these are little girls. They were 3 and 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Just ooing and eyeing over him. And the father was right there, and he was not concerned at all. So I just, you know, I'm glad that you called in. You had firsthand experience with him. You picked him up that night. You wrote the intake report.
Yes, I did.
And, you know, people wanted to hear from you, so.
And definitely. Yeah. Memphis is
and
not.
And let's face it, that's got to be one of the hardest times for Memphis is when he's picked up. Isn't that right, Jim, that, you know, when they're that stressed out, when you first pick them up, that's surely a good, quite a good indication of what they're going to be like because they are stressed. They run around, they've been chewed from pillar to post. Is that right to say?
Well, there are plenty of dogs that when you pick them up, you actually get a worse reaction than you normally would because, I mean, for instance, you put them on a catch pole and there are a lot of dogs that will freak out and start helicoptering or flip-flopping around and panicking because they don't know what's going on. So I would say that if you're going to see extremely bad behavior, it's probably going to be during that first encounter, and it's very likely to be fear-related.
I can actually back that up 100% because I was telling Jim before, and I have told the listeners about this before, when I rescued a dog only a few weeks back, and I picked it up off the road. I've got Emma, who's 11, screaming in the back of the car, "Mom, stop, he's going to get run over." And I'm stopping the car and getting out and, like, getting this dog in the car and everything. And it was fine. It was a Whippet cross with whatever. And anyway, and it was, you could tell it was an old dog. It was tatty looking a bit, you know, and it obviously left from somewhere. Do you know what I mean? We got it in the car. It was fine. It sat, not a problem at all in the car. And we literally got to town, and I said, "Well, we'd better take out the car for a bit because it's getting quite hot." We reported it to the police. I went to take her out the car, and I literally just, the lead was lying on the seat, and I went to get the lead, and I picked up the lead and started to say, "Come on then," and as I said, "Come on then," and lifted up the lead, she obviously felt a little bit of the tug of the lead onto the collar, and all of a sudden she went straight at my hands, and there I got blood gushing from everywhere from this dog that had literally been sat there so good as gold. So literally with a split second of being fine to literally me picking a lead up, do you know what I mean, and me being fine with it, it literally changed just like that.
And you know, and stress will get a response from a dog. Yes,
exactly.
You know, just out of fear or whatever, a dog goes back. Any organism, whether it's a dog or a human or a squirrel or an amoeba, is got one of three choices. They can, if something comes at them, that they perceive threatens them, they can either run. They can freeze in place like a bunny rabbit in the headlights going, "Okay, I can't see you because I closed my eyes, so you can't see me." Or they can fight. And that's the only three hardwired responses there are for any animal. So if you stress an animal, you're going to see very likely its worst behavior.
Exactly.
Oh, Sue? I just wanted to also correct, there was a statement made recently, I believe at the meeting, that Lauren said that, once again, about Mike Spinell being the person that takes up Memphis. And I just want everyone to understand that Mike Spinell did not pick up Memphis. I am the person that picked up Memphis. And, you know, to clarify that, because she keeps telling everyone that he was the first ACO on the call. No, he was not. Mike Spinella called me around 7 that morning on my way to work when I got the call from Memphis to pick up the stray dogs. And he told me he was in the neighborhood, and he was asking me a question regarding the call that he was on at that time. But then the transition of me trying to capture Memphis that day with all the, you know, the little action, I decided to contact Vanilla just to make everything easier on everyone, especially the dog and the safety of the public, to help, to assist me. And that's, yes, you know, that is the reason why Vanilla was there at the time. But Vanilla did not capture Memphis. So,
right,
you know, they keep saying that, and, you know, it's like, it's really just ridiculous.
What people need to know is that Moira was let go, and the other ACO that she's referring to is still there. So that's kind of why it's important about what she's saying.
Good.
Moira was the ACO that picked him up. And, you know, it matters also if this, you know, there is, Memphis has a lawsuit. So, you know, people are going to have to come in and testify that had experiences with him. And she's the ACO that picked him up. She knows, you know, she knows dog behavior. And
it's really sad that Mike Spinella is
actually lying. It's important to clarify who exactly picked him up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's even sad that Mike Spinella is actually telling Lori and Kathleen, you know, that Memphis growled at him. I was there. He did not growl at you. Like, why? I just don't get it. Why are they lying? Why is he lying? He was the SPCA.
The reality check of this is, from just an ordinary lassie sitting in the UK listening to all of this, we have got thousands and thousands and thousands of dogs in shelters every single day where some are being put down because they haven't got room for them. And we've got a guy that's trained, who's got the situation and everything, to take a dog on board, and they're saying, oh, sorry, but no. What the hell in God's name has the world come to? I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds out there that are looking. And I must just pick up on something that Mike said, which I thought was hilarious, from somebody who's an absolute animal lover. And I always say, if I look into their eyes, that's just dangerous. His words were, Jeff only had him for a few days, so how could he have fallen in love with him?
Who said that?
Mike Fitzpatrick said
on the show. Well, that just goes to show you.
Isn't that right, Jeff?
Yeah. And
I'm not being funny. I went to the rescue kennels, and I said, my cousin was with me, and it was so funny because her words were, before we got there, oh my God, if I'm coming with you, but I am not taking a dog home. I'm telling you now, I'm just not taking a dog home. I'm telling you, I'm just coming with you just for some, you know, I'll be with you, blah, 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 but I'm not taking one home. We got down three kennels. The third kennel, she heard a story about a whippet that got a slit throat with a Stanley knife and had a red hot poker put up its bottom. She heard the story and they said, I'm sorry, you can only foster. She said, no, I'm apologizing for my actions, but no, I don't want that. I want to adopt him, and today. He doesn't deserve to be in here because of his story. And let's just say a week and a half later, she was at his house. The dog was at her house and stayed there for 15 years.
God bless
why, so what I'm going to say to you again is, why not just let a dog that's got a home that is waiting and just let him go home to somebody that is experienced, and you're not going to get another Joe Public who is going to be as experienced as Jeff to do it.
You know, this kind of goes back to what I was saying the other day about rescue and the mindset of people in rescue, how they're a different breed. And most of us, even, and I am involved in rescue, and so is Jeff, and I'm sure a lot of people on the call are as well, and I'm not saying that animal lovers in general don't have this type of mindset, but common sense would tell somebody with this type of mindset that every second you waste on political BS, like they're pulling with Memphis, takes away another second from another dog.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other animals that need to be having focus put on them. Kathleen has now also condemned four more dogs at the shelter. What's going to happen to them?
Yeah.
This is a waste of everybody's time. And this poor dog, like I said earlier, is being bounced around. This is just more instability for him. So if anything, they're not helping him. They're hurting him.
Yeah.
But Memphis, God bless him, has the temperament where this won't faze him.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly.
Well, thank God he's a good dog. I don't think it will faze him.
No.
Moira, yeah. I've just got Joe on the line, and he wants mm-hmm. to ask you a question. Hi, Joe. Are you still there, love?
I'm still here, Sue.
Hi, Joe.
You wanted to ask about his nose or something? Ask away.
Yeah, Moira, I don't know if you saw the quote-unquote note that was written on the back of the intake form.
Mm-hmm.
I'll read you the whole thing. I'll try and be quick, because it's just a little note. It said, Moira unable to catch dog, called M. Spinella, who was ACO on night, to help. Dog came in exhausted from being on the run. Dog has a deep gash on the nose, cleaned and applied antibiotic. Dog showed signs of anxiety to be expected after being on the run. Raised lip when put into kennel. Mark cage card staff only until dog settles and further eat out can be made. Put in ISO for 7 days, signed by the manager. So my question is any of that accurate? Do you actually have a gash? You know, can you address the note?
He did have a little, very tiny scar on the tip of his nose. That was not during his capture. Memphis had that scar before he was picked up.
Was it bleeding?
No, it was not. The scar was not. It was not bleeding. We never applied any medical treatment to his to Memphis. He just, you know, had food, water, his bed set up, and put in the cage. I'm the one that put him in the cage. So I don't even know why she's saying that. He snarled or showed lips when I had him set up in his cage for the night.
Did anybody else have interaction with him that night aside from you?
No. If anyone did after I was gone, actually no. We were still closing at 4:30 at that time, so no. No one else would have had any interactions with Memphis.
All right. I this is important. You guys have to forgive me because this is the basis for the evaluation. So.
Oh, and another thing, Joe, that it's like tampering with documents type thing with Kathleen putting that on the back of the intake form. If she had any notation she needed to note about Memphis, it should have been written on a medical sheet, not on the back of that form.
Okay.
And when she did that, who knows when she wrote that on there, because that was not written the same day I wrote up that report.
Did you ever, when was the first time you actually saw that notation?
On the internet.
Okay. So from February to August when you were at the shelter, you never saw that notation?
No, on Facebook. That's when I saw that. And I just
didn't believe
that.
Get on Facebook.
And, you know, it's unbelievable that I didn't address it at the time. I just addressed, you know, my information on the front of the page about the non-aggression bringing in Memphis, which is true. He's
okay,
not aggressive.
So I just want to make sure I have my facts right. Are you telling me you did not see that notation before and after the first evaluation was done?
No, I did not.
Okay, so that because then what was the, as far as you know, what was the reasoning for the first evaluation? Why did they ask for it?
The reasoning. Kathleen claimed that he showed lip. Oh, that little smile of his. That he showed lip. And he growled. That's her claim. This supposedly had happened when no one else was around, which is really funny. You know. But that the lip thing that she's saying that it's actually a smile. Because Memphis does smile, the deference smile that actually Jeff did mention in his video. He grunts. When he's happy, he makes this weird grunting sound. So, you know, I actually told Kathleen that Memphis grunts and Memphis smiles at people. He does not show lip or teeth. He's never growled at, you know, any of the staff. Never. So I just couldn't figure out where
anybody,
was getting this from.
Did anybody else, while you were there, have anything negative to say about Memphis while he was there?
No. Okay. I'll be honest. No. No one. Everybody adores Memphis. Memphis was spoiled rotten. He got a little bit more attention than a lot of the dogs that were actually at the shelter. Even Mike Spinella would take Memphis out in the backyard and remove his leash and allow Memphis to run in the back of the shelter building. This aggressive dog that Kathleen claims that he is, this killer dog, will snap at any moment. Mike Spinella will take him to the back and allow him to run free.
Can you tell us who was actually interacting with him while he was at the shelter, who was playing with him, walking him, actual interaction?
Let's see. There was Nancy, another ACO, Jeff. He was a kennel staff. Mike, the other ACO, and I think that's, and myself.
Okay. Did you ever witness the manager train him or take him into her office alone or any of that?
She did take Memphis into her office and lock the door. She will have him behind locked doors. If she considered that as socializing, but there was no training. There was no training. Actually, Memphis does not. He does not. You know, he doesn't need training. To be honest, Memphis. When I first brought in Memphis, you say sit, stay, lay down. Memphis did everything. I didn't have to give him treats. I didn't have to manipulate Memphis in order for him to do this. Memphis, wherever he came from, he was already trained, by his previous owner. Well-behaved dog.
He knew commands before he came to the shelter.
Yes.
He recognized them.
Yes.
Okay.
Very obedient. He's a very good dog. He listens to everything we tell him stay, he would stay. Even a few times when after his walk, after I, took him for his walk and we sent him to his cage, and I remove his leash, I would say, stay, and the gate will be open, and he would sit there and watch me leave. He never tried to run out. After me. Other dogs would run out. They would try to, get out of the cage. But Memphis, he didn't. He really was just very relaxed.
Okay. Yeah, you have to forgive me for asking all these questions that we've heard story before having access to you to ask you directly.
Right.
I guess the other thing I really want to ask quick is, did you witness anybody at the shelter saying negative things about him? Because you mentioned the bad dog thing. Was there anything else happening?
Other than, Joaquin, he's afraid of every animal that comes in, cat and dog. Really, no one else said anything negative about Memphis. Other than Kathleen, sorry. Kathleen is the only person that had something bad to say, negative to say about Memphis. There was a cop that came in. He would patrol the cemetery and the shelter while he was on duty, and he will stop by and interact with some of the dogs. And he actually saw Memphis and fell in love with Memphis. He wanted Memphis. He took Memphis out of his cage. We did not know. We had no clue what this happened because we were inside cleaning early in the morning, trying to get everything, trying to get the place situated before 1 o'clock. And he took Memphis for a walk, this aggressive, bad dog. And this was in March, I believe. And he was already condemned as being an aggressive dog by Kathleen. So the same bad dog was walked by someone he didn't, you know, a complete stranger, and fed by a complete stranger.
Good, good. Sorry, I've got another caller that's dying to come in onto the line as well. We've also more information. Hi, Pat. Sorry for the delay on the line. How are you doing? Oh, no, she's dropped the call as I've fetched her in. Okay, I apologize to Pat, who's been waiting on the phone line. Obviously, the trouble is with everybody wants to come on the show, and I am trying to give people enough time to put their story and their information across. I do apologize to Pat that you've waited, but there's other people who've also been waiting on the phone lines a long time to call in. Pat, if you would like to call back in, I will put you straight on, but obviously there is loads of people that want to do their information and discuss their things on. So I apologize if I've offended anybody in any way that have had to wait, but there is loads here on the phone lines waiting as well. So again, I apologize, and I am just one person, so I'm trying my best. We've also got Mary on the line, who has been waiting also patiently. Hi, Mary, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you. How about yourself?
Now, I'm catching up with everything eventually, thank you. Mary, tell your information you've got to give, love.
Okay, first let me say that I came into this when I first heard Jeff was being denied a dog. I shop at his store, and that was my first red flag. I was not involved with shelter volunteers prior. I did donate to the shelter. I'm not a Bloomfield resident, but they do hold events in my town, and I have to say that after all this, I've gone to try to get all the facts, and after all this time, I am no clearer on the situation from the health department, despite all my efforts. And, you know, I mentioned at September's Board of Health meeting an article I found online when I tried to find information about this shelter manager, where it was from July 2010, and she said, you know, that she'd had a corporate career, and up until that point, which was only 2 years ago, her experience was in the corporate world and was only on a personal basis with the animals.
It was as a salesperson. We posted her
correct.
Resume.
And so then I had since seen the resume, and the points that Hillary made were excellent, saying that she dates everything back 20 years with dates and even the month and year. And then when it comes to the animal experience at the top, her corporate experience ended in 2010, and then there are no dates applied, and she has Banfield Pet Hospital. Well, I went to look up that information because it says Portland, Oregon, and Banfield Pet Hospital that's their corporate office, and they are a vet hospital located in PetSmart stores throughout the country. That's where their locations are.
Well,
so
they're actually a franchise. PetSmart is affiliated with them and will send their customers to them. There is actually a vet hospital in Oregon.
Okay. But they have branches and different locations in all.
Yeah, it's like a franchise, like McDonald's.
Right. And I did actually go into one in Secaucus and ask, you know, how do you get a job here as a vet assistant, what is listed on there, and was told that, you know, you could just apply online and that no experience was necessary. And in addition, she has certifications listed on her last page with no dates whatsoever. And when I looked up some of those that she has through the Humane Society, some of them are online courses that can be completed in a couple weeks. And I've never been able to get an answer or understand why, despite attending all the meetings and asking questions and speaking, and no one has ever come forward with a problem with this dog. Not one person has spoken up at a meeting and said, I'm scared that this dog is out there. Even Kathleen herself. And I don't understand why what just baffles me is how somebody with limited experience, her opinion is being held as a basis for this whole situation. And
I'll tell you why. Because she's unqualified and they hired her. This is not the first time it's happened. They don't want to be accountable.
Well, and this is the other thing. I've looked more and more, and they had a Humane Society evaluation done in 2009, and the recommendations in the minutes from meetings say that one of the strongest recommendations was to hire a shelter manager. And yet nobody's been qualified since that time. And that fault all lies within the management.
No, no, people have been qualified.
Since
they 2010? Don't choose those people.
Rommel?
No, there were other people that were qualified. There were two ACOs there that could have done that job.
Okay, yeah, but I'm saying who they appointed as shelter
manager. They overlooked those people, and it was intentional, obviously, you know.
Right, right, but I'm saying
like
the people
somebody pointed
chose,
out earlier.
They chose and gave the title to.
And, right.
You know, the other thing is that, so no matter what, there's nobody else who's come forward. And if you were really concerned about this dog, then why don't you stand up and speak at a meeting and say, I met this dog, and I'm worried about him being out there. And
because she's
she
lying.
Thinks he's a time bomb, yet she'll lock herself in the office with him. And
yeah.
She's and this is what I laugh because I keep hearing the comment of, well, she's been working and keeping late at work, putting in all this extra time. Well, why in the minutes did she go part-time? Beginning,
she's not
at the beginning,
doing that anymore.
The beginning of May.
Yeah,
so
she stopped that lasted a very limited, that was a very small amount of time.
Right, but they portray that's the thing, is everything is portrayed that way. And so I don't see why, and now, the thing that that I just don't understand is also, you know, they tell Jeff, well, where are your notes? Where is this? Ask him for dates for credentials, things like that. And, you know, when people opened Memphis's file, there is nothing from her aside from that note on the back of the intake form regarding notes of working with him and
that's
what she was
point.
Trying.
Okay. Can I ask a question? Do we still have Jim, Jeff, and Moira with us?
Moira.
Jeff's here.
I'm here.
Moira, are you
Jim,
still here? Okay.
Yeah.
Jim, is Jim Crosby still here?
I'm still here.
Yes,
okay,
I'm still here as well, but I was just sorting out phone lines.
Okay. A quick question for you three, since they brought up this topic, I think this is important to broach. If you have experience working in a shelter, what do you learn from that experience, and what do you learn over a period of time when you're in that environment in regards to dogs and their behavior? Versus not having been there, like what new things do you learn, or what would you like? Because that's a different environment than a home, and I'm trying to think of how to approach this question properly. But
I guess I'll
go
first if you want.
Yeah, please.
The first thing I learned was to start your own rescue. Well, all kidding aside, and I think you posed it to me last week as well, Joe, is that you get to experience, and, you know, I volunteered at quite a few shelters, and obviously everyone knows that I was the volunteer trainer and evaluator at Bloomfield Shelter for about 5 years. And, you know, the numerous shelters that I've been around, you get the opportunity to see dogs change and, you know, what the stresses of the shelter does to them and what stimulation does for them. And like I mentioned last week, you can have a really frustrated dog come into the shelter. He decompresses after a while. You get a better idea of what his true nature is. And as you work with him, you can see him progress. You can also see that same dog who, let's just say for whatever reason, stays at the shelter for an extended period of time, and this doesn't happen with all dogs, but this is just one of the lessons you can learn. Over time, regardless of what the stimulation is and what the training is at some point, and people refer to it as kennel craze, where they start spinning, and you know, there's a lot of rhymes or reason to them, but when you're exposed to shelter, to the life of shelter dogs for an extended period of time, you get to see a lot of changes in behavior, both positively and negatively, and you also get to understand the people side of it as well, because like I mentioned, and I mentioned it all the time, is that the shelter is, you know, is just as much about the people as it is about the dogs. And the balance of all of those things together, I feel, is what makes or breaks a shelter.
Yeah.
So,
Jim, I don't know if you could chime in.
Yeah, I'd have to say that from the time that I spent running the shelter that I did, and animal control, you learn that there is a lot more going on to running a shelter and also to being an animal control officer than people think of, and that there's a lot of stuff to juggle. And yes, you do have, you've got to juggle the humans and the dogs and the public and all of that together. And that, yes, the dog's behavior, if they're left unaddressed and just simply abandoned there in the kennel, yeah, dogs do get kennel crazy. They start having specific behaviors like spinning and chewing and so forth because they're bored and they're not being stimulated and they're not hitting a social environment and they're not, their needs are not being addressed. But, you know, it's like listening to Moira having worked in the animal control environment, people really don't have a clue all of the things that an animal control or a shelter person deals with on a regular basis. And took over and was running the shelter, I went into it with a lot of dog experience and a full career as a law enforcement officer, and yet I still wound up learning things almost every day because it's a whole nother environment. And, you know, I think that having substantial animal experience is very important for someone who is leading or directing a shelter. And I have seen cases where good programs have gone down the tubes because the people who had taken over running shelters didn't have animal experience, but simply had, for instance, business experience. And now, not in every situation, but I've seen some where that has been a very clear negative for the programs and has negatively affected the programs and the stuff that was going on at the shelter that was good before that person took over because they didn't have the animal knowledge. I think it has to be a balance because, especially as an animal control, you have to be the adoption agency and the rescue agency and the law enforcement agency and the veterinary department and the complaint department and everything else, and it has to all be wrapped together. People, I don't think, appreciate that.
Let me ask you one quick question since you were talking about that. What's the danger is if you put someone in a position with that kind of responsibility without the experience, what kind of mistakes can be made and what kind of effect could they have on the animals and the people that are coming in?
Well, I think the biggest thing that's going to be a problem is that person is going to have to learn very rapidly and under a lot of pressure, a whole lot of different lessons that if they were experienced with animals, and I mean, you know, with wide experience with animals in different circumstances beforehand, that they would be able to hit the ground much more effective than having to learn from the get-go. I mean, it would be kind of like me taking over, for instance, running an airport. Okay, I know that planes come in and planes go out, and I know absolutely nothing else about it. So if somebody appointed me as the head of an airport, that would be, you know, kind of cool, but I would have to do an awful lot of running and learning
at
a dead run to try and catch up, to even begin to be confident, whereas even if I was a pilot, I would have a better idea of what was going on before I got there. Forget being an actual administrator. So
right, and
I
the job title that... I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, I kind of wanted to hear from Moira, too, if she's still with us, because just what she's been learning as an ACO from, what's your experience? What have you learned while you've been on the, actually working and being at a shelter?
Well, this actually is my first time working inside of a shelter. I've never done this before. So this was really totally different for me.
Well, where did you work before Bloomfield?
Humane Society in Newark, and we were always on the road, never in the shelter unless we were dropping off animals that were picked up. So I've never spent time more than 10 minutes in the shelter at my first job. So this was really, this is totally different.
But you've had an extensive experience picking up strays.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. We service probably 15 towns or more.
Wow.
And that's Essex County. We covered a lot of Essex County. It's not a easy job, but hey, it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun working with them. We did get a lot of dogs and cats every day. There's never a dull moment. So when I got the job at Bloomfield and was told that it's going to be cleaning in the morning, dealing with, you know, cats and dogs, and then as calls come in, we go through our calls, this was really something that I never expected to be doing. So, I'm adjustable. I can easily adjust to anything. So it wasn't.
And honestly, Maura, that's really what most small agencies do. Is you don't have the luxury of having just road officers like a big
right.
agency would do. Even though you may have a big population, if it's a small agency, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There were times that I even wound up cleaning kennels because we had people sick and it just had to get done.
Right.
But it
was not a problem. Well, you know, I adjusted to it. You know, my problem, you know, as I worked there, actually my first 3 months, the first 3 months working there was really smooth. As soon as Kathleen Georgievich started working there, it's when everything went downhill. Anyone can tell you I'm a quiet person. I really don't start trouble. Like I keep to myself most of the time. And she attacked me a few times at the shelter. She approached me. She has threatened me. She has said racist things to me. It was just really, really ugly. It's a very hostile work environment. Other than having to deal with the lies she was putting out there about Memphis being an aggressive dog, I had to deal with her own personal, her own vendetta, or however you want to put it, because she told me and a few staff members, we're not allowed to tell people that Memphis is a good dog, and I disagree with her to her face that I am not. I refuse to tell the public or anyone that asks about Memphis and say he's a bad dog, because he's not. And
yeah.
From then, she had it out for me. It was like, okay.
This is what concerns me, because it's not just Memphis anymore. And Mr. Crosby, I hope the shelter does contact you again, because there are four dogs that have been, I don't know if they've been flagged correctly. They've been flagged, no dogs, no cats, no kids. And it cuts down on the amount of people that are able to adopt them, and it's a concern for me because they're all pits.
That's four out of seven dogs. That's more than half of the dogs that were listed
yeah.
on Petfinder at that time. And
so,
it's a concern.
Really quick, I just want to mention that there was a dog that came in, another pit bull that came in before Memphis, and he had aggression. He was labeled as, you know, she said that he can be adopted out with someone that has children or just any adopter. He was never evaluated. That's Bubblicious. His name at the shelter was Bubblicious. I believe his name is Shane. And Bubblicious tried to bite a lot of people. He was never evaluated by anyone, but he was adopted out in a heartbeat.
Bubblicious didn't act like that when he came into the shelter. That
no,
was
he
a
did
case
not.
Of kennel stress. He was a young dog. He was not
mm-hmm.
getting enough exercise, and it was affecting him. But he did fabulously in his adoptive home.
He did. But the thing is, my point is,
right,
because
right,
Memphis, to condemn Memphis that he's a bad dog when Memphis never tried to bite anyone. He never lunged at anyone that stood in front of his cage. He never tried to bite a kid, anyone that stuck their finger in his cage. He never did any of those things. But yet you have Bubba, who he is a great dog, yes, but he has issues. He has things that needed to be worked on. And she never addressed, she never made an attempt to have it corrected. It was just put him in a home with no children. Like, seriously, do you not think this young couple will want to have a child later on? Think outside of the box, Kathleen. You know, it's not about you. It's about everyone.
Moira, yeah. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
After issues came up with Memphis, since you were still there to August, did a Board of Health member ever ask you your account of bringing him in?
No.
Did Ms. Corey or Mr. Fitzpatrick ever ask you?
No.
So they never attempted to get your account of things. The only thing they had for your account, and even though the intake form says you brought him in, that
mm-hmm.
they did, no one asked you.
No one ever asked me. Mike Spinella and Kathleen are the ones that communicate with Lori and Fitzpatrick
mm-hmm.
Because they have that little bond with Lori and Fitzpatrick. So most
but they're always preaching firsthand knowledge. So you think they'd go to the source?
Yeah, no, they never talked to me about capturing Memphis and you know, where, when, how, nothing. None of the, you know, not at all. They never did.
So
and
Mr. McLaughlin's testimony was based in the letter that he wrote to the town council was not
a lie.
Your firsthand account. That,
no.
Okay.
No.
I just wanted to check that. Thanks.
That's a lie. Another thing I just wanted to mention regarding Memphis coming in, his first few days being there, Memphis never really barked. He was very quiet. And the day the day I heard him bark, his first, you know, first time barking, he sounded as if his voice was strained. And I never really, you know, have heard a dog with a strained voice before. So I mentioned to Spinella, Mike Spinella, the other ACO, what's wrong with his voice? Like, that's what I said. You know, I asked him, what's wrong with Memphis' voice? And he said, Memphis probably was a drug dog, and they probably cut his vocal cords. So I said, seriously? Because I really didn't know that they can do that. And
that may be the source of what this all the accusations about him being used as protecting drugs.
Yes,
that is
from,
the source.
That statement.
Yeah, that is. It's Mike Spinella. He's claiming, making accusations that Memphis is a drug dog, and that's why his voice was, you know, sounds so weak. But as time went by, and Memphis was more confident with his bark, it got louder and deeper. So there was no issue with his vocal cords anymore for him to continue saying that Memphis is a drug dog. You know, raised in a drug area, and Memphis was not picked up in the borderline of Newark. He was picked up in the borderline of East Orange. When I first got the call to pick up Memphis, he was in the borderline. The closest borderline he was in was Glenridge. Then we ended up in the border of Bloomfield and East Orange. Never, he was not picked up in Newark. It was not the borderline, you know, of Newark, which I'm from. I'm from North, and I have a lot of my neighbors that have pit bulls. I live in the suburban section of North, and a lot of my neighbors do have pit bulls here. So for him to say, you know, what he said about Memphis being, you know, a drug dog in North, it's just really, really biased. It's just ridiculous.
And that whole thing baffles me, is because the fact is, and I was appalled when he spoke on the radio, his, I have been to the meetings and did not know prior to her standing up and speaking about being bitten at the shelter, I did not know the woman. And when I heard him speak about, you know, her telling her story so inaccurately, that's been presented now at two meetings, I couldn't believe it. And the whole thing is for him to say these untruths on the radio is he is a member of the health department, which is currently in litigation. He should have never signed on to do a radio show. That shows such poor judgment right there,
yeah,
that he would agree to do that, because anyone in litigation as a party should say, I can't talk about it, much less go on a show that's promoted to be about Memphis. He
mm-hmm.
wasn't tricked into thinking it was something else. And now I hope the Board of Health really listens to that, because as of Thursday night's meeting, you know, that they had not heard it and it brought to their attention, that I hope they all do their due diligence and listen to it and really realize the poor judgment of that man. And they need to go back and question everything that has been brought before them previously that they have relied on his testimony for. Because if he can go on radio and do that and make that kind of decision, they have got to question his judgment.
Well, he got a raise.
Yeah, but see, and then that's the other thing. Is that
was
done in closed
session. And
he got
a car, too.
That was done in closed session. And, yeah, why do they keep taking on interlocal contracts when they can't handle their own town?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they're just like, it's really disgusting.
Mr. Crosby, I have a question for you, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You mentioned, and the reason this came up is because I attended the Open Paw Shelter training, and Kelly Dunbar also made the comment that was similar to, you had remarked about how impressive their numbers were on their kill rate and of 2% and how well they did, and Kelly brought it up at the Open Paw, saying how phenomenal that was for a municipal shelter. Do you recall, you may not even remember, but the statistics that they gave you, were they based on a number of years or 1 year or how they came to that number?
I don't know. I did not see any documentation on that. I was told by Mr. Fitzgerald that they had this very tiny, less than 2% euthanasia rate. He didn't explain whether it was over a year or over 6 months. But in talking with them about the number of animals they took in versus how many they actually put down, it sounded consistent, you know, that they only put down a very, very, very few animals. But then that's an agency there, remember, that takes in a very low number of animals a year. You know, they only take in a few hundred.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's...
So, yeah, I didn't see any documentation of it, but then at the time, you know, if somebody tells me about something like that, it's like, okay, you're the boss here. I'm going to believe you.
Can you tell me exactly, or tell us exactly, what Open Paw is? Now, the reason I'm asking that is because I've been on their website. I don't see any testimonials. I don't see any awards. It looks like they've been around maybe 10 years. And when you
mm-hmm.
mentioned earlier about inexperienced people going in and having to learn everything, which is a lot, to me, this is just one more instance of someone having to be told how to do their job.
The Open Paw program is, I'm not sure exactly how long it's officially been around, but it was started based on the work of Dr. Ian Dunbar. And Ian has been around for 30 years
mm-hmm.
and is a great trainer and behaviorist. He's a PhD and a vet. And I know Ian, and he is extremely talented and experienced. And Kelly's his wife. Open Paw was something they put together as a program to help socialize and adopt, basically, shelter dogs, and to
mm-hmm.
give them the enrichment and the positive human contact that they need in order to be successful in adoption situations.
Why would a shelter have them come in?
It's actually a great thing to be able to have them come in, because that way you can give people more training and information. People just assume that they know what to do with dogs, and they don't always. There's lots of misconceptions, and you know, people have prejudices. Oh, pit bulls are all bad, or they have rotten dogs, or all German shepherds will leap at your face, or whatever it is. By coming in and doing the training, what they're doing is putting everybody on the same page and giving them the same procedure, so you don't have the dogs being given different messages by different people.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Would a qualified manager need to have open paw come into the shelter?
Well, yeah, very possibly, because it's like if when I was running the animals, the shelter I ran, if I'd had an opportunity to have open paw come in, I would have invited him, because it would have simply increased the skills of my staff.
Mm.
And it's like if I had an opportunity tomorrow to attend the open paw training, I would go do it despite all the things I've done, because there's always something else you can learn. And to be successful, especially in dog behavior, and Jeff will back this up, you've got to have as many tools in your toolbox as possible, so you can always learn something from the next guy. I've been to Ian seminars. You know, even though I teach seminars, I still go to other people's seminars. We attend each other's stuff. We swap stuff back and forth, because we're all learning all the time. If you stop learning, that's when you wind up making mistakes.
Well, absolutely. All right, but I'm just trying to clarify, because Kathleen Georgian wasn't at the shelter but a few months when she wanted them to come in, and you know, the volunteers are gone for the most part, and I just, you know, the health department's always crying they don't have money, and I'm sure you probably don't even care about any of this, but I'm just trying to figure this out in my own head. I just, to me, it's another waste of money. I feel like if they had hired a qualified person, this wouldn't be necessary, especially at this time when they keep complaining that they're broke and they don't even have any money to help Memphis. So,
and I don't know whether Open Paw charges, whether they actually charge to come in, or whether it's something that's done for free. There are programs. Okay. See, I don't know, because
they got to make money somehow, right?
Because they said Open Paw training, they said it was NTNN was funding, I believe.
Okay.
But there was some mention of somebody helping to bring it to them.
Well, like I said, I don't know, because I never had the opportunity to bring them down here to Florida, because they're out in California. But I did, while I was at my shelter, I did read their materials and study them and pass as much information along about them as I could to my staff without having them come in. So having, you know, a program like that come in, whether it be Open Paw or there's a program that another group does called Training Wheels, where they have outreach into communities and actually come in and help train and inform the shelter people and the ACOs how to increase positive interaction with the community. Those are good things to bring in, and because, you know, running a shelter and doing a shelter, there's so many different things that if someone has specialized knowledge that you can reach out and tap, so that your folks don't have to, you know, reinvent the wheel, then that's a good thing. You know,
yeah,
I would agree.
Under a different circumstance.
Especially a life-saving program that, or a program that could save lives by making more dogs adoptable.
Yeah.
And thereby, you know, reducing your kill rate and, you know, increasing the success of your programs. You know,
I guess I would agree under different circumstances if there was already a qualified manager in place, but her resume clearly shows that she is not qualified with no animal care experience. So my other question is, when they talk about minimum requirements on their website, what does that mean exactly? That's what their, you know, their focus is, minimum requirements. What does that mean?
Well, in government hiring purposes, you have to, a government job, you have to post what minimum requirements are. And that means that somebody with less than that cannot be hired for that job. And a lot of those are set by law. you know, for instance, to in the state of Florida, to be an animal control officer, you have to have a valid driver's license, and you have to, you know, there's some minimum standards, and they're usually set pretty low because you have to, you know, you don't have to choose the lowest people, but you have to give everybody an opportunity that within reason to apply for a job. As a police officer, for instance, I had to have, right now here in Jacksonville, you have to have a four-year degree, you have to have a valid driver's license, you have to have a clean criminal record, and you have to pass various other criteria. And that's where you start. That's not what gets you hired. That just gets you in the door to apply. Mm-hmm. So that's what minimum standards are, is you know, how that's where applicants have to start out. Then from there, you start getting more job specific.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
One thing I'd like to ask Mr. Crosby, since he has the experience of being a shelter manager, you're hearing about some of the issues that everybody's talking about. If our goal is to actually really try and help the shelter that's here in this town or any other shelter having these kinds of difficulties, what can be done to aid the situation, or what can be done to improve the shelter? Like, well, what are things that we can do as a community and ask our Board of Health to do to not only run it but to always be improving it?
Good question.
That's a very good question. I think it's important first that whatever has happened up to X date, everybody has to start over and say, okay, we're gonna start from the word from the go, and we're going to cooperate and communicate both directions, and we're going to be open about information. We're going to be open about statistics. We're going to be transparent in what we're doing, for the agency. And the community has to say, we want to support the efforts of our shelter to be a positive thing and not just be the dog catchers. We want professionalism. We want professional behavior, and we want, if you want, reduced kill or low kill or whatever, and then stand behind and say, and we will help find the resources to be able to enable you to do this. It has to be a cooperative venture. It can't be, you know, you can have a shelter that means well and wants to do great things, and if they don't have the support of the community, they're still stuck.
All right, what about vice versa?
Right.
And you can have a community that wants to do lots of things, but if you don't have a shelter that is forward-looking and professional and wanting to make a difference in the community, then you're equally stuck. So
right.
You have to get everybody to drop back and put away the politics and to put away the personal enmities that may have come up. And, you know, well, so-and-so was ugly to me 6 years ago over such-and-such a situation, and drop back and say, okay, instead of what we've got now, let's all back up and start over and work together, because that's how you're going to make the biggest difference, is working together. If either side is not holding up their end of the bargain, then it's going to fail, no matter how well intentioned you are. It's a tough job. From both sides, it's a tough job. It's a tough job to do the shelter side, and it's a tough job to be a community activist and supporter. Because there's a lot of work to be done by both parties. There's a lot to have a really positive program, but it can be done.
Well, the other thing I want to ask really quick, and you have to forgive me, is since we're having difficulty getting communication from them, how can we reach these people? How can we get them to sit down and be like, look, we want this run well. We like our volunteers reinstated. We want to have an adoption committee. We want to have all these things because it helps the dogs and it helps the people coming in to get them. How do we get there? Like, how do you when you have someone that's closed their mind and has set down the thing and said, this is it, we're going to kick people out and do this and do that, how do you reach them? How do you put the olive branch out to try and resolve the situation?
That's probably the toughest part, is to get both parties to the table. I think that one of the things you can do, and whether it's this or I was talking with Sue earlier about legislative issues, both here and in the UK, instead of going at a situation saying, you're doing it wrong and we don't like what you're doing, you have to go into a situation and say, we're not happy with the way things are going, but let us propose some alternatives.
Unfortunately, that's been done, and it didn't work. I think we're kind of at a standstill.
Hillary, just let him finish his idea.
Just let him finish his idea.
I'm just letting him know that we have tried.
Yeah, well, and like I said, I don't know that you haven't.
I'm not saying
you're suggesting that. But you also have to get both sides willing to come to the table. And if you can't get cooperation from level X, then maybe you need to go above level X and as far as you need to go to get someone to say, okay, we have a community here that wants input. You need to constructively put together a program to get input and meaningful input. You know, just listening to people and nodding your head and smiling, and I'm not saying that anybody's doing that, but in situations I've seen where that's happened, that doesn't accomplish anything because you're not really addressing the problem. You're just going through the motions. You have to have both sides have to be committed, and both sides have to go in good faith, and you have to somehow get that cooperation. And sometimes you can find it, and sometimes you have to work your way up higher. And you know, unfortunately, there are times where simply, for whatever reason, people are going to plant their feet, and you're not going to get it. And then you need to keep looking for ways in the door, or keep looking for ways to. If that doesn't work, then look for ways to change the management structure or the political structure.
See, the thing is, Jim, this is what I actually said to Mike Fitzpatrick before he actually came onto the show. I said to him that I wanted to be, if you like, okay, a very public mediator, but I wanted to see his side of it. I'm not one that just listens to one side. I wanted to hear both. But he, literally a quarter of an hour even into the show, was already stringing himself up with just simple questions that I asked. I think everybody in the chat will agree that it was not anything of a difficult question, but he was saying things he didn't know about certain things. This was a dog that was in the public eye that literally was, I'm not being funny, it's not one of the dogs that's in the shelters that's one of the others. Memphis is obviously top of the agenda because every single day he must have another letter on his desk about him for whatever reason. But he couldn't even answer some of the questions, and I have had proof from different information, emails, and literally information as in photocopies of stuff that actually proves that he lied. Well, how can you help somebody that doesn't give you a trustworthy answer? How can you actually try and mediate with them? And that's somebody that's in the UK that isn't a threat to him or anybody, who's literally saying, I want to hear two sides of the story. It's just so difficult. And I've heard everybody that I spoke to, I've said, you know, I mean, even Jeff said that he wanted to take donations into that board meeting to be able to hand over to them. Does that sound like a guy that's not handing out olive leaves?
Really?
Or a bunch?
Like I said, it's the human part of that is the hardest part to deal with, and the politics and so forth. And you know, it's obviously gotten to a situation where both sides are definitely at loggerheads, and you know, I don't know. I unfortunately don't have a magic answer on how to make people sit down and cooperate. I wish I did, because if I did,
yeah,
I'd be a whole lot wealthier than I am now.
That's,
you know,
right, and I would be working
me
for
me too.
Really? Precisely.
Can
I
just?
If I can just. One thing I do want to mention quickly is we do have a council member in town who has come out during a meeting with the suggestion of moving the shelter from the health department under the council to operate as its own entity to try and take the politics out of the shelter. So then once a month they would just deliver a report to the town council. I think, the proposal, Jim, maybe you can give us an opinion, is basically take the politics out, get it out from the health department, put it under the town council as its own separate entity, and reboot from ground zero, from the ground up, reboot it.
Having a shelter as its own entity is not a bad idea, especially if it's going to increase transparency and make it more responsive and accountable to the council and to the public. Personally, I like seeing an animal control agency underneath the police department or sheriff's department, because at the end of the day, they're still an enforcement agency. That's part of what makes it difficult doing animal control, is you're sort of almost a cop, and you're definitely an adoption person, and you're sort of almost expected to solve behavior problems, and you're also expected to handle complaints from the public. So at least the enforcement part of it, to me, makes more sense to either be a standalone agency or to be accountable to the police department or a policing agency, because there's an enforcement issue. And most of the time, animal control has to work closely with the police anyway, because they're picking up stray police calls, or they're getting bite reports, or the police are raiding someplace and they need your help to corral animals or whatever. So either... You know, I've seen them under health departments, and I think the health departments, although health departments have an intrinsic need to be involved in health issues like rabies control, and are usually required to be by law in the states, the rest of it is not so much a health issue. I've seen bad moves like putting animal control under parks and recreations. I think that's insane. Animal control has nothing to do with parks or recreation. Either a standalone agency or under a police department, both would make sense.
Would it make sense to you then, based off of that, if you had a standalone agency, however, the animal control aspect of it would fall under the police department?
You can't really... In a small place, you don't have the resources to split it. Your animal control and your shelter, you're doing both things at the same time. I think trying to split it is a bad idea.
All right. Well, then, Sue, the thing I would put to you is, then let's embrace that. The one positive thing that has come out of this, let's try and support moving it under the council so it could be its own agency and reboot it. If we need to get qualified personnel, we'll get them. If we need to get volunteers back, let's get them. Let's do what we can to take it out of this political mess and get it rebooted so it can operate at a low kill rate, treat the animals well and treat the public well, and try and get a rainbow out from these clouds, if you will.
And fast, yep.
With a qualified person in charge.
Well, yeah, good personnel, the whole nine yards, and just reboot it from the ground up.
Yeah,
and make sure that when you do that, you know, if the kill rate is actually as low as it is, and I have no reason to doubt what I was told, you know, you might find records that say elsewise, but you know, if that is true, make sure you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, because if their kill rate is honestly less than 2%, that is a tremendous, positive, huge, cool thing, and you need to guard that with tooth and nail from being dismantled, no matter who's running it or who's in charge of it. That is such a positive thing that it needs to be defended by both sides standing together, not fighting at each other. That's the one you need to stand back to back against all comers and defend.
Mm-hmm. Well, just so you know, I had asked that because one of the points I said is, you know, based on what time, where those figures came from, is because If those numbers are indeed accurate, they need to give more credit for those numbers to the volunteers who gave their time over the years and did such an excellent job with the adoptions.
Well, I agree with you. I think this positive effort, I'd like to see. Jim, I don't know if there's any material you could suggest that we could look at. You know, where can we pull a shelter manual from that's a good place to pull a shelter manual? Where can we pull operations? Like, where can we pull paperwork to give to the town council to say, look, we want to help you as a community to fix this. You know, here's information that we found. Here's reliable sources. Here's, you know, try and give them some kind of paperwork package to prove to them as a community we want to do this.
Mm-hmm. As far as actual functional animal control rules, the best animal control agency in North America, bar none, is Calgary Animal Control in Calgary, Alberta, in Canada, run by a friend of mine, Bill Bruce. That is the finest agency in the American continent. They're willing to work with anybody. As far as adoption procedures, No Kill Nation will, you know, reach out and provide all sorts of information and resources and guides to working with adoption programs and TNR programs and so forth. So there are some resources out there. Email me and I'll send you some contacts.
Okay. I was just going to say, Jim, if I sent you an email, could you just send me a big package of everything, please, of any links
Sure.
you think will help us?
Sure.
Thank you, Jim.
No problem.
Right, Jim, I'll
Yeah.
definitely email you for that. Now, I've just got to bring my old mate onto the show because he's got withdrawal symptoms and he just wants to come and say hello, and you'll never guess who it is. Hi there, darling.
How are you, Miss Sue?
Howard.
Oh, okay, darling. He had to
How
come on
doing?
And bless him.
I've been listening on and off. I've been at work, but what a powerful, amazing show. Just unbelievable. And, now, I know that good is going to come out of this, and I think a lot of awareness is being created. So I think in the long run, this is, it's terrible what's happening, but I think in the long run, I think a lot of things are being learned, and I think we're going to learn a lot of things. And Jim, I want to thank you for all your knowledge. You're quite amazing.
Well,
thank you for your positive
suggestion. Yeah, I just got to say that I think that the best way to handle a problem is to recognize the problem and then to try and give positive suggestions and alternatives, because you wind up, if you don't, you get into the kind of hole that, you know, you dig yourself into a huge hole, and it's got to be a situation where instead of, and I tell people all the time because they want to complain, and again, Sue and I were talking earlier about BSL in the United Kingdom. Instead of just saying, we want to do away with this, say, okay, we recognize that this is your problem, and here is another way of solving it, rather than just simply banning a whole class of dogs. So you
exactly,
go in and you say,
exactly.
we recognize the problem, so let us propose an alternative that might work even better without losing the good parts of what you've got. And the good part of what you've got there is, again, the fact that if you've got a less than 2% kill rate, then that's something that needs to be protected.
Yeah, but, you know, the big thing that Sue talks about is OSL. That's Sue's big thing, and it's true owner. You know, it comes back to the owners, which is true. The owners have to take responsibility also. You know, like I say, Jim, and who's ever on there, you know what terrible things were done to Patrick and how many people we're united and how much good's coming out of it. Well, I believe that Memphis has taken it to the next step, and now, you know, through all this, we're learning more, and Memphis has certainly united people and brought more people together. So I think, you know, with the knowledge and, you know, the awareness and everything else, I do believe in the long run, good will come out of this.
It's important to shake out, you know, to look at a situation that's become negative and say, okay, how can we proceed from this point? We've gotten here.
Correct.
We're in trouble. Okay, let's go forward and just put the past behind us.
Exactly.
Learn from what the mistakes we've made and move on.
Exactly. And you move on. And
I agree.
You, yeah.
Only if
on
it was
that,
yes,
on that positive note, guys, I actually have to sign off because I do need to have dinner with my wife tonight. I want to thank everybody, but I do have to get running.
Joe, never say I have to have dinner with my wife.
Take it from the guy who's down
a
crate.
She's older than you either.
Well, hopefully there won't be a picture of me in a crate, both, you know, signing on later on, okay?
Sue, can we do a little, you think we can do like a mini follow-up on Tuesday, if anyone can call in for the Tuesday show?
We've already got the link ready, and it'll be on the Ask Sue show. It's already on the Ask Sue show, but I'll post it again on the Ask Sue show group as well. Tuesday follow-up show.
Thank you guys very, very much. Everybody have a good night.
Okay, bye-bye, Joe.
Bye, Joe. Bye-bye, Joe.
Can I just say something about all of this, right? And this is going to go on a bit of a bigger level here and talk about opening my umbrella to even bigger. At the end of the day, I think I can feel a rant coming on here, so just be careful. But I just want to say to everybody, Lennox brought loads of people together. We've had Memphis, we've had Patrick and everybody, and we've had thousands of people have joined all over the world. This is not just Bloomfield or just not UK, not just America, whatever. This is worldwide, okay? But it is now time when all of us can actually make a stand. And it's like Jim said, let's grab the positives out of this. We have got thousands and thousands and thousands singing off the same hymn sheet. But now we've got to stand as a choir and approach our governments, which includes these small little fry. And I'm going to say that because Bloomfield, let's face it, is just one in thousands that are all over the country that may be doing things behind the scenes that we don't agree with. But at the end of the day, there is cruelty, there is all different things all over the world, and all of us could do a massive stand if we stood as a choir rather than singing a duet, just one or two of us together. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, this has brought thousands and thousands of people together, and if we can make awareness of Bloomfield, let's face it, we can make awareness of all over the world. It doesn't just have to be there. It's not just going to be them that have got problems or whatever. There's places that have got short of money. There's people that are short of staff. There's people that have just got problems within or not the right staff or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of us having a go at everybody, we should be literally uniting the whole world and saying, do you know what, we've had enough now. The governments have got to take some of this stress off us and say something's got to change. And until we start attacking these governments that aren't changing anything, they're just letting it potter on through, we're never going to get anywhere in life. That goes with changing, like myself and Jeff were talking, Jim, were talking before the show, and Jim was saying sort of the same sort of lines as OSL as me. So if that means that me and Jim are talking on the same hymn sheet, and let's face it, I'm just a mum who lives in the UK who loves dogs, and Jim's got the professional level and a higher scope, why does that not mean that we can all work together and all get that? BSL's never going to be ended, but we can change into something that's positive that's going to make a difference. And I hope that with our Sue show, that's exactly the words that I want to hear. That we were positive and that we all got together and made a difference. And only us can do that. We can't blame society anymore. Each one of us is part of that society.
And Sue, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Sue.
No, it's all right. Carry on.
I just want to, as I always at the end, I want to thank you for bringing us all together. And I think Sue deserves a little round of applause there from all of us. She certainly.
Thank you.
You hear me clap?
No,
I'll get my dog barking again, too.
But you know, I call Sue the coach. She's truly brought us all together. She's given us a forum. She lets everyone express their views, and that's the most important thing. And that's why we all love our Sue so much.
We love you, Sue.
Thank you very much. My cheeks are now glowing. Thanks for that, guys. Love you, too.
Hey, Sue, by the way, before I forget, did you ever get that picture of Memphis you were promised by Mike Fitzpatrick?
No. Well, I was just going to bring that up for a finishing point, actually, and you beat me to it. Jim,
sorry.
I actually asked on the show, my one request that I asked for was Fitzpatrick be able to literally forward a picture of Memphis to let us know that he's okay, or a video of him exactly like what they asked with Lennox, just a picture, just proof and everything else. I would just like to announce to the whole of the world, we still are waiting for a picture or a video and we have had nothing.
And Sue, he said it would be coded and dated. Those were his words, coded and dated.
Jim, could you have a listen to that, the other show? And then if you want to come on the Ask Sue show and then give a bit of an answer to that on Tuesday, you're more than welcome.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Excellent, excellent. Well, it's getting down to 3 minutes, and I've got to say a lot of thank you. So, first of all, thank you very much, Howard, for calling in. I really appreciate it, darling.
Well, thank you for having me on.
And you have a good the rest of the day, won't you?
I will, of course. I'm going back to work.
Oh, no.
All right, then, darling. Thanks very much, Howard. Talk
okay.
to you soon.
Okay. Take care.
Bye, bye, Howard.
Bye-bye, guys. Love you all.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Right, and thank you very much to Moira, who's called in. Thank you very much for giving us all that information. We really appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Moira.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And thank you very much to Mary, who also called in. Thank you for calling in.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mary. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mary.
Bye-bye.
And a big, massive, massive UK hug for Jeff. Thank you, darling, for calling in.
No worries. Thanks for having me once again. And thank you, Jim, for your time. We really appreciate it.
No problem at all. You're very
definitely.
Welcome.
Okay, Jeff. Thanks ever so much, darling. Catch up with you soon. Love to Diana as well.
Bye.
Okay,
bye, Jeff.
Bye. And Jim, well, even a even bigger hug for you for taking the time, because we really do appreciate every minute you've spoken with us tonight. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Very much.
You're very welcome, and I'm glad to be able to assist, and you know, I'm glad to be able to be a part of an effort. Like I said, the whole thing I think that needs to be a bottom line to all of this, and it's great that everybody's moving. Is that you've got to cooperate to be able to improve the situation. You've got to look at where there's problems and put
exactly
the bad part behind and give and try to build something constructive instead. And I think that's what you're doing here.
I'm trying, Jim. And if you would like to sit on the garden fence with me any time with Ashley's show, I would really, really appreciate it.
Sure, anytime. Y'all have a good
Jim,
night.
Jim, thank you very much
thank
for calling
so
in,
much,
and
Jim.
A big hug to your lovely wife as well.
Bye-bye.
Okay,
bye.
Bye-bye, Jim. Well, Hillary, I think we did quite well there, darling.
I think everybody did fantastic.
And to tell everybody, if you've not seen the links already, the truth about the Bloomfield Health Department is a page on Facebook. Myself and Debs and Hillary are all going to be sorting that out. If you've got any information, please forward it on to us on that page, anything, documentation. But we don't want slander on there. We don't want all loads of rubbish going on there. It's got to be proof and evidence. So,
yeah.
Well,
any
first-hand
experiences,
so-
yeah.
Definitely.
Sorry.
Definitely. So, Hillary, thank you very much for joining me on this Ask Sue show.
No problem. Thank you so much for hosting and inviting everybody.
It's quite all right. Thank you very much, darling, for calling in.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
Cheers.
Thank you, everyone,
bye-bye,
for
darling.
Your support.
Okay, cheers, love. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Right, a very quick 16 seconds of very Sue quick rant time. Please, everybody, to keep the show going, you need to join the Ask Sue show group on Facebook. This is to make this show even bigger. Thank you very much to all of my callers, to everybody in the chat, and I love you all very much. Please keep joining on the Ask Sue show to see what's coming up soon. Howard Show with myself on Tuesday for a follow-up. And again, I cannot thank you guys enough. Join Ask Sue Show on Facebook or AskSueShow@gmail.com. Good night. Thank you.